Hi, everybody. Today is Monday, March 31st, 2025, and our friend Paul Carrick-Roberts is back with us. Welcome back, Paul.
Thank you, Nima.
Let's get started, Paul, with the shocking news that yesterday Trump, it seems that MSNBC reported that Donald Trump said he's going to bomb Iran and it's secondary sanctions. And here is what he said and the way that he's picturing the situation between Iran and the United States.
Tariffs on Iran, and we'll probably give it a couple of weeks, and if we don't see any progress, we're going to put them on. I'm not putting them on right now, but if you remember, I did that 6 years ago, and it worked very well, to put it mildly. And if the election weren't rigged, you would have a situation where there would be no problem with Iran today, but it was. Biden didn't know what he was doing, obviously, and we have a very rough situation in the Middle East because of that. You ended up with October 7th, and you would have never had October 7th, and you would have never had Russia going into Ukraine likewise. But we're going to make a decision on secondary tariffs on Iran based on whether or not they're going to make a deal. If they're going to make a deal, then we're never going to put secondary tariffs on. We're going to hope they have a great, long, and successful life as a country. But we'll see what happens. Very interesting. I can't imagine them doing anything else but making a deal. I would prefer a deal to the other alternative, which I think everybody in this plane knows what that is. And that's not going to be pretty, and I do not prefer that.
So,
yeah. Here is what he said. And we had the foreign minister of Iran saying that if Trump thinks he can intimidate Iran, he's wrong. Iran won't allow anyone to address it using the language of force. And we do not bow to the threats. And when you look at the situation right now, it doesn't seem that we are getting anything different from the Biden administration in terms of dealing with Iran. Do you think that Donald Trump, he really wants to make a deal? If that's the case, why he's threatening? Go and talk with them.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what the deal is that he has in mind. Clearly, he is threatening Iran, and I think he's doing it for the purpose of getting a negotiation from that he wants, whatever it is he wants. I don't think Trump intends for this threat to result in actual bombing or an attack. I think he thinks it'll work because he's found that threats work. They often work. So, what is really going on? Well, we said one thing. He's trying to threaten Iran to give him something that he wants. We don't know what that is, at least I don't know. Another thing that could be going on is, a few people have reasoned that Trump is tired of all the troubles Israel caused, and that he is going along with them to keep them quiet so the Jewish lobby doesn't get all over his back while he's trying to fight the Democrats and their judges and the American establishment and to reorganize the U.S. government and stop the DEI policies and all the rest. That he doesn't really want to have the Jews on his back causing him trouble as well, so that he is acting as if he is doing what Netanyahu has wanted the United States to do for years and years, which is to get rid of Iran for them. Well, they don't want to risk it. They want us to do it for them. Well, so far, no administration has complied with this request. And I suspect that Trump won't either, but I don't know that. So we have a choice. It's a threat to get Iran to acquiesce to something that Trump wants, or it's a cover for him to keep Israel off his back, to keep the Jewish lobby off his back, until he can deal with other problems. And then, a few people reason, he's going to slap Israel down because he doesn't want war. It's a distraction from his domestic agenda, which is huge. It's what he's taken on, in my opinion, is beyond his strength. The kind of revolution he's talking about, it could succeed, I think, only if it was led by a Lenin, who's simply going to wipe out the opposition, because the opposition has too much at stake to acquiesce to Trump. So the trouble with wars is they become all-consuming. And then the domestic agenda goes on the back burner, and he doesn't achieve his agenda. Well, that's what I have to say about that. Now, let's consider, Nima, the possibility that this does lead to war. You know, it's often the case that a threat, which is meant simply to get compliance, can go wrong and end in a war. Well, let's look at that. I think if the Pentagon is paying attention and being intelligent, they will have warned President Trump, look, it is our understanding that Iran has the Russian S-400 air defense system. If this understanding is correct and this system is deployed, and not just sitting in boxes in a warehouse somewhere, our B-52 bombers will never enter Iranian airspace. They'll be blown out of the skies. So you won't be able to bomb anything. And any fighter jets leaving aircraft carriers will not be able to enter Iranian airspace. They'll be blown out of the skies. And if the information we have is correct that Iran has enormous numbers of long-range missiles that are hypersonic, we will lose every aircraft carrier you have deployed in the region. And it will be a humiliating naval and air defeat for the United States. Massive. Should Iran use these forces that we think they have? Of course, they may not, because they may see that delivering such a strong defeat to the United States will result in the Americans crying for revenge and outcome nuclear weapons. Nevertheless, it's a very dicey situation, and it's not one that we really want to test, because what's in it for us? What's Iran doing to us? Why should we take these kinds of risks for Israel? Makes no sense. I can't understand the animosity toward Iran other than it's driven by the Israel lobby. Because what are the Iranians doing? Nothing to us. They're not doing anything. They're not threatening us. They're putting up with our sanctions, our threats. So this whole conflict originates in Israel trying to use the United States to get rid of a powerful country that's in the way of Israeli expansion in the Middle East. Well, why should any American be put at risk for that? This is the real issue, Nima. And so I conclude that Trump is banking on a threat producing something. It doesn't have to be much, just something he can claim he has a victory. And let's hope if that's the case, the Iranians perceive that and deliver the something, because then he can tell Israel, okay, look, I've got this now. It's all over with for now. I've got something else to do. And they'll have a hard time saying he didn't do anything and send their forces out to cause them endless troubles, because the Israelis have enormous influence in the United States. It's really enormous. So that's my take on it. I don't think, unless Iran is negligent, unless these S-400 air defense systems are not really deployed, or unless Russia is not going to let them use them the way Russia treated Syria with the S-300s, they will never let them use them against Israeli and American planes. So unless there's something like that going on. And also, Nima, there's one other factor. We tend to forget it because it was some time ago, but two things have happened. Putin made a statement that he wouldn't permit an attack on Iran. And then later, the Russians and the Iranians made some kind of an agreement. It's not a mutual defense agreement like they should have made, but it is sort of a connection that neither would look with favor on the other being attacked, and neither would in any way aid the attack. So there's always a risk that the Russians would intervene. It's always a risk that Russia and even China, because China has enormous energy investments, as I understand it, in Iran, as they did in Libya, and they lost those to an overthrow. They probably don't want to repeat that in Iran. And they may simply offer Iran the protection of their nuclear umbrella. You can't really tell how countries will react to this type of a situation. But what Trump's doing really only has one excuse from an American standpoint, and that is he's holding Israel off from turning the wolves loose on him in Washington. And that if that's what he's doing, at least there's an excuse. Otherwise, it's not an excuse for what he's doing. Because as I've said, and I think most people would agree, Iran's not threatening us. They're not doing anything to us. All we do is try to prevent them from selling their oil and therefore drive up energy costs. Well, it doesn't hurt Iran. And what would they do with the revenue since we've got them sanctioned? So I don't know how important it is to Iran, to whom they sell the oil, and I imagine they're selling it to China. So that's my take on it and my answer to the question you posed.
Paul, if we assume that Donald Trump has a decision to make in terms of Netanyahu, is he going to support Netanyahu the way that the Biden administration did during 4 years? Or is he going to let Netanyahu face the difficulties that he's making in that region? Because that is the reality for Netanyahu. Are they going to help him, or are they going to let him experience what he has made?
Well, I don't know. I have no idea. And it really depends on how strong the Israel lobby is in the United States and how much it applies its force. My own belief, and it's not powerfully strong belief is that Trump will simply tell Netanyahu that all the violence is over and we're not supporting it anymore. It's what he should tell Zelensky. It doesn't depend on what you do or don't do. We're just not supporting it any longer, period. I think Trump could do that. You remember he did force Netanyahu into some kind of stopping, at least for a while, the slaughter in Gaza. I forget what that was, but he did sort of redeem the Riot Act. I forget now. It wasn't that long ago. So I don't think Trump personally is inclined to accept any kind of coercion from anybody else, certainly not from Netanyahu. And I think as well that Trump may be relying on Israel to get rid of Netanyahu. You know, Netanyahu is under indictment. And the only reason I think he's not in prison is that he's the prime minister. So he has to stay in office. And that's caused him to move further and further and further to the extreme right. Well, this is undermining his support in Israel. And also, I understand, of course, you never know what's true anymore because you don't know about the news reports. You don't know. But reportedly, Netanyahu is trying to completely corrupt the Israeli judicial system and turn the appointment of jurists over to the prime minister so that it simply becomes an enforcement division for the prime minister rather than a court of law where law is applied. So he obviously feels the threat of the judiciary and is now trying to capture it and turn it into his instrument as opposed to an instrument of law. That then gets rid of the indictments and it allows him essentially to govern as a dictator. So this could produce a tremendous opposition within Israel. You know, Israel does terrible things, but a lot of the Israelis themselves are, they believe in a rule of law and those sort of things. Maybe not applied to Palestinians, but certainly applied to them. And so this could, Netanyahu could end up cutting his own throat internally. I'm not saying this is going to happen, but there is that possibility, and Trump may be aware of it. And so he may just be stalling to see if Netanyahu does himself in. You know, he's not a beloved leader. And it's a very small government he's got. I mean, it's all based on a collection of small right-wing parties. And it's not something that people have shown any confidence in. So there's that element that could be part of this equation. Well, I can't say that Trump or his administration is or aware of any of this. There may be, there may not be, but there's always that possibility.
We have another character, Paul, similar to Netanyahu's one, is Zelensky in Ukraine. It seems that Zelensky is turning to be one of the biggest difficulties between Trump and Putin. Here is what reported yesterday.
President Trump called me to tell me he is, quote, pissed off with Russia's President Putin and threatened to impose secondary tariffs on Russia's oil. Quote, if Russia and I are unable to make a deal on stopping the bloodshed in Ukraine, and if I think it was Russia's fault, which it might not be, but if I think it was Russia's fault, I am going to put secondary tariffs on all oil coming out of Russia. Mr. Trump said 25% tariffs on Russian oil could happen any moment and told me he plans to speak with President Putin this week. The president told me, quote, I was very angry, pissed off when Putin started getting into Zelensky's credibility and started talking about new leadership in Ukraine.
Why is Zelensky so much important for Donald Trump? He's not even the president, official president of Ukraine. Who's supporting Zelensky?
The British Prime Minister and the French President. You know, I don't know who that newswoman was, but I have no idea if the report is accurate or not, because most of their reports are designed to embarrass Trump. And so I don't necessarily believe a word of what she said, but it could be the case. But let's go to the real indication that we have of a major change. Last Saturday, that was what, 2 days ago, the New York Times published a very, very long article. It was so long, it was in chapters. I don't know if you've discussed this with any of your people that you interview or not, but my understanding of this is that the New York Times has said, look, this was never a conflict between Ukraine and Russia. This was a direct war conducted by Washington against Russia from the American base in Germany. And that the whole thing has been an American war, not a proxy war, a direct American war using Ukrainian bodies against Russia. And this article, if it was an article, it was really longer. It was more or less like a monogram.
A chapter.
Yeah, it says that everything was working as intended until Zelensky got in the way, started playing the big shot, the important person, interfering with the American plans and trying to run the operation himself, and then everything went wrong. In other words, this article in New York Times has blamed Zelensky for the failure of the war and accepts that we've lost the war. The Russians have won it, and it looks like it's the deep state planning on the New York Times the excuse for Washington to withdraw from the war because Zelensky lost it by not doing as he was told. Well, I haven't heard any Trump response to that, which I find mind-blowing. Trump never had any stake in this war. And here is the deep state that caused the war admitting that we were responsible for it, not Russia, that we were running it, and that Zelensky lost it, and we are writing it off. So that was clearly a CIA written document handed to the Post. And they've published it. Well, this is extraordinary. It's a confession by the United States that they caused the war and was intended to overthrow Russia with a defeat. And it would have worked except for Zelensky. So I read this as, okay, Trump, now you have an excuse for getting rid of him. We've already written him off. We're not participating in this. And so why these threats to Putin now? Why now? When he has a clear field. I also don't understand why Trump expresses this kind of threat to Putin, which he can't enforce. If he's trying to make peace, he's not creating any confidence for Putin, who has to be skeptical, given all the betrayed negotiations he's participated in, such as the Minsk agreement. He can't be very optimistic. So here he is. He has kept the agreement not to hit the domestic energy infrastructure in Ukraine. We now have 6 Ukrainian violations. Another one has just happened. Despite these violations, Putin has said, we're sticking with the agreement. Now, I can see he might do that with the first violation, but the second one, he should have simply said, hey, look, once again, we've been deceived. There's no agreement. They're not keeping it. So we aren't either. This would have caused Trump to do something. Instead, again, he's shown he'll stand there and take whatever blow is delivered and not do anything about it. Well, this is an extremely weak way to negotiate. Now, given a man like Trump, when he sees something like that, he's almost driven to take advantage of it. Even if his instincts are don't do it, don't do it. He said, gosh, that's an opening. I've got to take that. So this is what Putin is doing. Is Putin is behaving like an idiot. He's saying, well, we don't care if you obey it or not. We're going to obey it. Boom. We got blown up again. Boom. We got blown up again. Boom. But we're not going to do anything. We're going to keep the agreement. What Trump sees, he's got somebody like that to deal with. He's lost all respect for him. And I think that's what we saw in that outburst that you just showed from the news reporter reporting on Trump's outbursts as a loss of respect for Putin. And Putin caused it by his willingness to do anything except win a war. He's absolutely determined not to win a war. So I just don't see how this, as I said at the beginning, can come out very well, because no one's behaving intelligently. No one is behaving intelligently. No one. See, the Iranians should say, well, what is it the Americans accuse us of doing? Oh, we're developing nuclear weapons. Okay, come inspect. You know, we made that agreement with Iran years ago that as long as they just enriched for power reasons, you know, nuclear energy reasons, and for medical reasons, we didn't care. They just weren't supposed to go so high that they could make weapons grade material. And Iran says they've kept that. Well, they could simply say, okay, let's send in some inspectors. What is this about? I don't know why Iran doesn't ask, well, what is this really about? Are you trying to concoct some reason to get rid of us for Israel? They ought to at least raise this issue. Somebody should raise it, because that's what's going on. So we have something going on that nobody will admit. So how do you really deal with it? If you're not willing to admit that this is Israeli driven to get rid of Iran, then you can't deal with the situation. And I've already, as I've already said, when Putin says, I'm sticking to the agreement, even though they keep violating it, then he looks like a pansy. You know, he looks like a dope. That you can't negotiate with Trump by behaving like that. If he had said on the second violation, that's it, it's over, and Trump has said, okay, we have to deal with him. Well, anyhow, that's my take on it all.
Paul, if we look at the bigger picture of the Trump administration, the strategy they're having in order to compete with China, let's assume that the main objective is the competition with China, not losing to China economically. If that's the case, if that's the grand strategy on the part of the Trump administration, how do they see Iran and Russia in that picture? Do they want Iran and Russia somehow be neutral or helping them, or they want to have Iran and Russia as their enemy? Do you think that do they have any picture of that in their mind?
Well, as we've said many times on your program, the American military security complex wants as many enemies as it can get. It doesn't really want to go to war with them, but it wants to have the enemies, because it means bigger budgets, more power, more profit. So yeah, the American establishment. But you see, the American establishment is what's under attack by Trump. That's his real enemy. It's the American establishment. It's the Democratic judiciary. This is the enemy, not Russia, not China, not Iran. It wasn't Russia and China and Iran that concocted Russiagate and DocumentsGate and CallGirlGate and all the others and the impeachments and the indictments and the two assassination attempts. It wasn't Russia, China, Iran. It was the American establishment trying to kill Trump. That's his enemy. Well, I think he knows that by now. If he doesn't, he's too dumb to be in the office. So why does he want then to have, in addition to the American establishment, which is a formidable force? You know, they used him up for 8 years, totally. I'm surprised he's still alive by all that stress and strain at his age. Why does he want to add to that Russia, Iran, China? Nobody in his right mind would. You can't survive that kind of overwhelming opponents. So no, I don't think he wants any enemies. I think he's got himself locked into his antagonism to China during his first term, when they were all saying he was a Russian agent. So he was trying to show the conservatives who supported him that he was standing up for America and he was dealing with the Chinese. Now, as far as economics goes, my understanding is China has already surpassed the United States. They don't have our control mechanisms like control over international finance. They don't, their currency is not the world reserve currency. It's their debt is not the central bank reserves of all the other central banks. They don't have those power aspects. But you see, we gave them our economy. We started this when the Soviet Union collapsed. For 30 years, they've been collecting our companies, our technology, our business know-how. We took it to them and gave it to them. Apple Computers, a Chinese-based company. Everything that we, all the manufacturing moved out. And so in place of a middle class, we now have a much larger lower class, because the good high-paying manufacturing jobs were given to Asia. And Mexico. So you can't blame China for that. It was Wall Street and our own corporations that did it. The reason for the trade deficit with China is that we produce in China the goods sold to Americans, and when they come into the country, they come in as imports. So it makes the trade deficit bigger. In fact, it's at least half the size of the trade deficit. It's just the imports of offshore American production. So it's nothing to do with China trying to get us or anything like that. And when you live in a country like the United States, where there's no reliable media, I mean, other than a few programs like yours, and I think that's produced in Brazil. If there's no reliable media, nobody knows what's going on, including the policymakers. Because where do they get information, news, interpretations? And if the CIA is serving the military security complex, they're planting all kinds of false stories in the media. They've always done that, always. They always have an explanation in place for whatever is about to happen. So Trump simply may not know, the Secretary of Defense may not know, the National Security Advisor may not know, they may not have any idea what's going on. It's entirely possible. When I was in the government, I was at a fairly high level. I went to important meetings where critical decisions were made. Over and over and over again, I witnessed the people in the meeting had no grasp of the issue. They didn't know what they were deciding or why or what the unintended consequences would be. They were just in a meeting, feeling important, making a decision. They didn't know what the hell the decision would do or whether it had anything to do with the problem and the issue. And this is characteristic of governments. You know, there are a lot of movies and novels and James Bond things that create the notion the government is omniscient and knows what's going on. And, well, that's not true. I saw it from the inside. It's very seldom have a clue what's going on. And Look, even the Cuban Missile Crisis, I think the only person in the government that had a clue was Kennedy, the president. The Joint Chiefs wanted to launch a hydrogen bomb attack on the Soviet Union. That was their response. Well, what the hell would have resulted from that, you know? The kinds of mindlessness. And Kennedy saw it, scared him to death. He said, these people have any sense, they're insane. Well, he was talking about his own government. So people forget that. Just because you get appointed Secretary of Defense doesn't mean you have any idea what's going on. Or you're a National Security Advisor. It doesn't mean you have any idea what's going on. Or that you ever will have. But particularly when things get driven by agendas, by ideologies. If what you're trying to do is embarrass Russia, then that's what you're focused on. You got no idea what the unintended consequences are of your policy because, I got to embarrass Russia. And that's all you can see. And so you have no notion what else is happening. You may be creating a terrible situation for yourself, worse even than Russia could create for you. I've seen it. I've lived it. You know, I can remember going home and complaining to my wife. You can't believe what happened today. And this was the Reagan administration. Now imagine what it was like with Clinton, Biden, Obama, George W. Bush. I mean, we're talking about people who are really short up here to start with, you know. It's people don't know. They don't really realize. And you see, I wrote the other day, I said, look, there are really only two people that count. Zelensky's not one of them. Putin and Trump. And they can end this immediately. All Trump has to do is say, hey, we're not participating anymore. Goodbye. We're out of it. And all the sanctions are off. It's over. Right there. It's over. Do you think the British and the French are going to jump in and take this on? No American missiles, no American GPS, no American money. They're not. The NATO countries have already said, look, we've given every weapon we have to Ukraine. We can't even protect ourselves. Let's hope we don't get invaded. We don't have anything to use to stop it. Well, these are not military states. France, Britain. I mean, I don't even think Britain has a full division of troops. I think they measure their troops in regiments, which are a fractions of divisions, at least in an American sense. Now, maybe it's different the way the English count. I don't know. But that it would be over. But neither one of them seemed to realize this. Putin doesn't realize it. Trump doesn't realize it. There's no need for bureaucracies from Russia, bureaucracies from Washington to be meeting in Saudi Arabia. About what? There's no need for this. And once you get negotiations going, the negotiators, their incentive is to keep doing it. They're in the limelight. They're important. They really feel important. Their image is being grown and cultivated, and their self-image as well. And none of this is needed. It's just Putin and Trump should just have a 10-minute conversation and say, how are we ending this? Okay, it's ended. Well, what's Zelensky going to do? Can't do anything. He just absolutely do nothing except surrender. If he doesn't surrender, there goes Ukraine. The whole thing is so easy to stop it. And yet everything they're doing seems to be to make it impossible to stop. How has Putin got any confidence in what's going on? He keeps the agreements and gets all these threats from Trump. What does that tell him? It can't tell him anything satisfactory. It's not. Trump should be saying, everybody noticed Putin's keeping the agreements, Zelensky isn't, but he can't blame it on Zelensky after this New York Times piece because it proves it's us that's not keeping the agreements. And so the last big blow up of the gas processing place that was feeding gas into Europe, the Russian defense ministry said, well, we have absolute proof it was done. The coordinates and the targeting and the order to fire were British and French. Had nothing to do with Ukraine. So, well, if we're not doing it, they're doing it for us. See, who is in control of this war? Trump or the deep state, the CIA, somebody in the Pentagon? Who is in control? And why was it done when Saturday, which I think was what, the day after the latest attack or the day of the latest attack on the Russian energy structure. We have the New York Times long piece planted by, I'm sure, the CIA, blaming the United States for the whole conflict, saying it was intended to disrupt and hopefully overthrow Russia. So none of this fits. You know, how do you fit the New York Times article Saturday with Trump's statement that the newswoman you showed with her giving Trump's outburst against Putin? It's, the two things don't go together. I don't see how you can get them together. So it looks like there's more than one American government in operation. Or there are two, or the three. There's clearly more than one American government, because these two things are totally incompatible. The New York Times story and Trump's outburst, they don't fit. I don't know what's going on. I can't explain it. But nobody will, I don't think, bother to notice or discuss it, because everybody's got an agenda. They're all agenda driven. I noticed that there's very little independent objective analysis. They see it in what serves what they've been saying or what their agenda is. And that's what you get. So if it's people who love negotiations, then oh, it's negotiations. And if it's people who demonize one side or the other, then that continues. I just see failure across the board. I don't see anybody doing the right thing, except maybe the Chinese. They're keeping their mouth shut about all this. It would help if Trump would. I mean, that outburst against Putin is totally unhelpful. And there, you know, Putin is coming under more pressure internally from people who are concerned about the lackadaisical way he went about this war. I mean, you know, I pointed out some months ago, it's Putin has led a war for a few kilometers, continue longer than it took the Red Army to drive the Wehrmacht out of Russia, Eastern Europe, and end up in the streets of Berlin. It makes no sense. I mean, the Wehrmacht was a powerful army, a million times stronger than the Ukrainian one. And Stalin can drive them out of thousands of miles quicker than Putin can drive them a few kilometers. It makes no sense. And people in Russia, a lot of them now, say, what the hell's going on? Why is this? You know, the two real combatants that he had fighting, this Prigozhin, who was the head of this Wagner group, and then the Chechen leader, I don't know his name, both of them complained publicly about the way this war was being fought. They said, we're not allowed to fight to win. We're allowed to take casualties. Why are we taking casualties? Let's get this over with. So they got rid of Prigozhin. I think they haven't done anything to the Chechen because, you know, that's a Muslim province that they had trouble with early in Putin's years in the Kremlin. And they got that calmed down, and they probably want to keep it that way. So I wish there were a large collection of people who could pay attention to reality and discuss things objectively without themselves having any agenda in the discussion. or caring about anything other than the objective truth. And it's hard to get at the objective truth. And even if you had that, you may not get to it because you're limited by information. This is the reason countries wanted to have intelligence services. They thought that somehow an intelligence service would have better information. I don't know if there's any truth to that. When you look at all the CIA's expectations and all of that, I would say there was never any truth that the CIA had any better information. And often they were openly challenged by that. I remember the Professor Richard Pipes at Harvard University during the Cold War. He said the CIA was so wrong, he created a what they called a Team B to give alternative intelligence analysis concerning the Soviet Union's military capabilities, the likelihood they would have a first strike on the United States, all that kind of stuff. It was very controversial and it went on for quite a time. So whether or not intelligence services have any idea of what's going on, I think ever since the assassination of John F. Kennedy, the intelligence service, the CIA, basically tries to control narratives that affect it by writing stories and handing them to their media puppets, we'll call them. And again, I remember some few years ago, the editor of the largest German newspaper wrote a book titled Purchased Journalism, in which he said there's not a single important journalist in Europe that isn't on the CIA payroll, including myself, he said. I published the stories they had me. Now, what reason does he have to discredit himself other than he realizes the truth is nobody knows what's happening. Nobody can make a good decision. Well, of course, his book, it was poo-pooed and all that. And there was supposed to be an English language edition brought out here. And it was killed, canceled. Some years later, one got out somehow. But it didn't get any attention. But you see, we're learning now from Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency, how many just false interpretations have been out and are implanted in the way government agencies themselves operate. They're actually operating according to false perceptions of reality. Because that leads to an agenda the people want who planted that impression. This is an amazing thing. This is extremely serious. And yet the Democrat judges don't want it out. And maybe the Republicans don't either, for all I know. So what all this rambling is that there are all kinds of extremely dangerous things in the world. All kinds of things could go wrong with their use. And yet nobody really knows what's going on in the world. They really don't. And I'm not saying I do either. But I'm not motivated with an agenda. And I can see some things clear enough that if we attack Iran and they actually fight, we'll be defeated. We'll lose every aircraft carrier, every bomber. I mean, it'll be a dramatic disaster. But Iran may not fight. They may say, oh, we can't do that. They'll nuke us.
Paul, we had this communication on Signal in terms of the attacks on Yemen. When you look at the communications on the chats, and you see J.D. Vance was making a good point in the chat. He said, why do we need to do this right now? Are we going to be that much influenced by Yemen? We are not that much influenced. So why do we need to do that? And you see that Hexet coming in and just trying to convince J.D. Vance that we are doing the best, we need to do that. And do you see in the Trump administration, do you see who's closer to Donald Trump? Do you find J.D. Vance would be the one who would be much more important for Donald Trump, or people like Pete Hexet, even Mike Walls, which both of them were agreeing on attacking Yemen, but J.D. Vance, he said he put out his doubts about the war with Yemen.
Well, yeah, Vance seems to be the thoughtful one. These other guys, you see, they're conditioned by the long decades of the Cold War, which of course began before they were mature. But so for them, they're caught up. It's kind of like students. They want their football team to win. You know, high school students, college students, they're for their team. Alumni, you have alumni, they're for their team, the team that where they went to college. I see it when I work out at the gym. The older guys are always talking about how their college's football team is doing. This is like one of the main things, and it's very important to them. So I think for people like the Secretary of Defense, National Security Advisor, they're caught up in that. It's always there's an us and a them, and we and the them have been demonized. The Russians about the Cold War, the Iranians, in fact, all the Muslims by 9/11. So it's just in their psyche that these people are somehow working against us, it's causes them not to be able to understand the situation. They just want to prevail. Like the kids at the university want their team to prevail. So when you have that, now Vance is thoughtful and says thoughtful things. Earlier, Trump indicated that Vance should be his successor, the president. And now Trump's talking about a third term. It really depends, too. You know, in any government, there's a lot of backbiting. There's a lot of envy and jealousy. There's a lot of rivalry. If they see somebody doing well, they want to pull him down. They want to get him down so they can advance. It's not like a team working together. It's not. They're saying, oh, this one's doing too well. And so all kinds of rumors start and things happen. That's a big part, and dealing with that is almost impossible. It's just human nature. If you get ambitious, competitive people, they don't really work well together. They want to dominate, to prevail. They want to be the one that moves furthest, moves ahead. If it's a bunch of assistant secretaries, they're the one that wants to be the undersecretary or the secretary. They scheme against one another. They'll use the media against one another. I've seen it all. And so You can't really tell what's going on. If you're one of them and you're in it, you might know what you're doing and what's being done to you, but it's a big picture. But I think the real question is, why are we bombing these people? Well, because they're interfering with Israeli ships. If ships aren't delivering stuff to Israel, they're not bothered. So it's a feeble effort of a few Muslims to support the Palestinians. Well, why is this evil? You know, we support the Israelis, so why shouldn't the people in Yemen try to support the Palestinians? I mean, the Palestinians are the one that needs support, not Israel. So it doesn't really make any sense. But again, you can say if Trump is behind this, I don't know. It may just be independent divisions in the military security complex somewhere, some Pentagon office. If Trump's behind it, then he's being tough and he's maintaining with his supporters that America is tough again. And so we're back in the sense that we're tough. And this is a way of kind of reassuring them and keeping them in a supportive position. That could be the reason. I don't claim to have a crystal ball. I only claim I've lived through much, seen it, and it's not like people think. That's the way it works. Is in fact, not long ago, the Independent Review, a quarterly, published my memoir titled My Time in the Reagan Administration. And with their permission, I posted it on my website. And if you read my experience, you can see that in the Reagan administration, it was at war with itself. I wasn't at war with the Democrats. I had more support from the Democrats than I had from Dave Stockman at the Office of Management and Budget, or the President's Chief of Staff, Jim Baker. And they were supposed to be on my side. So, realism, we don't get it from the news. And there are podcasts like yours, Larry Soprano's, others that try to get at. And I think that's the honorable and good thing to do. And it's far more important than the print and TV media. And but, you know, it is heartening that the New York Times was able to change its position 180 degrees overnight. Now, that is something. And yeah. What explains that? What explains that? Clearly, the deep state has decided to get out of this war. And blame Zelensky for it. It admit that we did it, but blame Zelensky for failing our success. We failed. We did it. We would have won, but Zelensky. He caused us to fail. And that's what the New York Times story says. Well, this is astounding. But it does set him up as a scapegoat. Even though it admits we did it, he's a scapegoat, not us. So I'm astonished that this isn't all over the headlines everywhere, that Trump's not being asked a million questions, that Putin's not saying, well, we told you. What are you going to do about it, Mr. Trump? Are you going to continue this war with us? You know, Putin and Lavrov, the last time they spoke on it, they denied that they were at war with America. America didn't have anything to do with it. They denied it. So even the Russian leaders won't accept reality. Well, if nobody accepts reality, how do you deal with the problem? I tried to present reality. I admit it's very difficult because the information is so poor. The only reason I can do it is my career, my education, things I was part of, saw. If without that, I wouldn't have a clue what I was talking about. And this, I think, is very bad, because how many people had my experience and my education? Hardly any, practically none. It's zero almost, who is still alive. And so how does anybody know anything? You're not going to learn anything from the CNN or National Public Radio or MSNBC or the BBC. These are all propaganda ministries. Well, what do you learn from a propaganda ministry? You don't learn anything. You get indoctrinated. So we've got a situation where the whole population of the world's indoctrinated. And we have a situation where even the leaders of threatened countries like Russia and Iran, they don't seem to be able to recognize reality. Yeah, we'll keep the agreement even though you break it. What's this? How can the president of Russia say such a thing? And expect to get an agreement? I don't know. And I don't understand why the Iranians are so reticent. They just simply say, you can't bluff us. We're not afraid. You can't bluff us. But they ought to be asking questions. What's this about? What do you really want? Well, why is the United States in Israel's pocket? We thought you were an independent country. Well, here you are crawling around on your knees for Israel. Well, why are you doing that? They don't say anything. Oh, they might hurt somebody's feelings or stir something up. I mean, what's wrong? You know? I mean, I don't see it. I can't figure it. And I cannot see how Trump can jump all over Putin when Putin's keeping the agreement and Zelensky isn't. Now, he didn't say, if Zelensky one more time breaks the agreement, I'm cutting off all the money and arms again. He didn't say that. He's going to do something to Russia. Well, if you were Putin, would you take Trump seriously after he says that? I don't see how you can. How can you? You got to say, okay, I trusted them again and got taken to the cleaners again. Well, how many times does Putin want to be taken to the cleaners? See, these are real questions. And if you're trying to negotiate an end of an agreement, you've got to have some substance to you. You have to be forceful and insistent. You can't just say, okay, we're going to keep the agreement. We don't care if they do it or not. Well, they're not going to keep it. And as I've already said, Trump, he has to take advantage of such an opening. He can't. He's got to do it. It's a triumph. The wrong one. He may admit it's the wrong one. I shouldn't do it, but he can't resist. So anyhow, I'm repeating myself. This is going on too long, I think.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you so much for being with us today. Great pleasure, as always, talking with you.
Okay.
See you. Take care. I'll send the link to you.
Okay. Good.
See you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Take care, Paul. Bye.